D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home in the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. I believe we have Willie Donick now. Are you there, Willie?
I am. Hello, Adam.
Hello. We will catch up in just a moment. Before we do, let's go to our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in our friend Trevor Maddich, who is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Hi, Trevor. How are you?
I'm good. I'm warm. So that's a blessing. I will take that any day.
Yes, absolutely. So we were just discussing the expected hiring of Brian Daboll as the Titans offensive coordinator. The reports are it's contingent on what happens with the Raiders head coaching opening, which Daboll has interviewed for a couple of times. But under the premise that Daboll is headed to Tennessee, how do you like the fit between he and Cam Ward offensively?
I am cautiously thrilled. Does that make any sense at all? Because I think if you look at Daboll's best performances as an offensive coach, you've got to go back to Buffalo, where he helped to initiate Josh Allen into the NFL and take him from just a raw quarterback from the University of Wyoming, a transfer from a junior college to get to the University of Wyoming, who then became one of the greatest quarterbacks in the NFL. And most of that was Josh, but part of that was the shepherding and the stewarding of the coach. Part of that was putting Allen into the kind of a scheme where he could excel, and then coaching him up to not give him too much, but to trust him to do as much as he could. So all those things had a lot to do with Josh Allen's development in his early NFL years, and Brian Daboll was coaching him through all that. So that makes me thrilled. What makes me cautiously thrilled is that in his first year as a head coach at the Giants, he was fantastic, but then everything kind of fell off. And so you saw kind of some of the weaknesses of his coaching style and of his scheme. He had a bunch of injuries there. They couldn't get the quarterback situation right in terms of injuries and personnel and stuff like that. And we see between Buffalo and the Giants that Brian Daboll is aggressive throwing the ball down the field. He will mix up tempos, mix up personnel. He has all kinds of ways to get mismatches and attack the defense. And when he's got an outstanding quarterback who's healthy behind an offensive line who can get him protection, and with receivers that can get down the field and finish plays on those air yard, deep air yard plays, you've seen Brian Daboll's offense excel. But when the quarterback situation is not right, when the offensive line is banged up, when the receivers aren't getting the job done, it tends to falter more than other offensive schemes and styles, because Daboll's style is aggressive, getting the ball deep down the field. So with Cam Ward, you've got the ability to throw that ball deep very well. You've got good young pieces on the offensive line that need to come together and protect better. But theoretically, if they can get the receiver pieces together, Daboll should be able to maximize everything and utilize Cam Ward's natural aggression. And so we'll see if that works out. We'll see if the personnel can come together.
Trevor, we have our Super Bowl matchup, Patriots versus Seahawks. And I want to ask you about Seattle specifically. The Seahawks sort of went against the grain by hiring Mike McDonald, a young defensive coordinator, at a time when the young play-calling offensive coordinator is in fashion. So based on McDonald's success, do you think we will start seeing a shift towards teams hiring young defensive coaches as head coaches in the NFL?
Adam, it's a copycat league, right? And whether or not it's the smart thing to do, if it's the temporarily successful thing to do, other teams will mimic it. So I can see that happening. But at the same time, I think just going for a coach who's got a good defensive scheme and is a good defensive designer and play caller is not the best way to find a head coach. As a head coach, you lose a lot of your ability to do what made you a great coordinator, because you're doing so many other things. And unless your name is Andy Reid, you know, there's a very small group of people that are offensive or defensive coordinators, play callers, et cetera, who continue that greatness as a head coach. Then there's some diminishing of what you did to get you to that head coaching spot. And so I think what you need is to make sure you focus on vision and leadership and accountability with the head coach. The Titans didn't have that when they hired Brian Callahan, you know, and so they had a guy that they thought was a great quarterback developer, but he fell short on the leadership and accountability side. And so I think with McDonald in Seattle, you've got a guy that does both, but more than just being a really smart defensive coordinator and play caller elevated to head coach, you've got a guy who can lead men, a guy who's a football man that the program in the locker room, in the coaching offices, everywhere else can follow. Then you've got his good defensive stuff. So I think as other teams look at what Seattle has done, if they start thinking, yeah, we need a defensive coach like Seattle does, well, if they think that way, they're going to fail. But if they make sure they've got the most important things for a head coach first, and then he's a great defensive coach, sure, I think guys like McDonald can open the door for more defensive-minded head coaches, even though we live in a time in the NFL where offense is king.
Trevor, one more for me before I hand it off to Willie. I do want to ask you a college football question, a story that I was following incredibly closely. Darian Mensa and Duke have settled their dispute, and Mensa is now expected to leave Duke and transfer to Miami. But still, a university took the extraordinary step of suing its quarterback to prevent him from transferring. How do you see this lawsuit, which again has been settled, but how do you see this dispute impacting the enforcement of NIL deals moving forward?
Adam, that's such a great thing to look at, because from a standpoint of Duke, the university, the program, you're talking about winning the battle, losing the war. Yes, Darian Mensa had a contract. Yes, Duke has the right to enforce that contract. But do they really want a quarterback that doesn't want to be there? Do they really want to tell future transfers that, yeah, they can sign a contract with Duke, but if they decide they don't like it there and they want to leave, Duke's going to force them to stay. Force them to stay. Now, in the NFL, that's normal. I mean, that's just par for the course. When you've got a contract, that's it. Nothing you can do about it. But in college, it's new enough that I think guys would be really upset about that. And at least in the short to medium term, Duke would cut off their nose despite their face if they would have forced Mensa to stay. You know, and I haven't checked it the most recent thing, but the quarterback at Washington had a similar situation where he signed a deal to stay with Washington. And then when Kiffin went to LSU, he said that, okay, I'm going to enter the portal now. And Washington kind of forced him to stay. And so he decided, okay, yeah, well, I'll stay. Well, that just creates a big, ugly, muddy mess. And so I think that that I'm glad Duke found a way to let Mensa do what Mensa wanted to do. I think it's better for the program and for the locker room, by the way, long term. But, you know, it's just one of those ugly things that will eventually have to become a standard procedure paradigm like it is in the NFL. Because before it becomes that in college, it will be an emotional bunch of turmoil like it was with Duke and with the University of Washington.
Trevor Maddich is with us. We're talking football with him. So, Trevor, here's just another general football question that I think is on a lot of people's minds, especially after the game on Sunday in Denver. Is the whole idea that the whole mindset is so normal now to go for it on 4th-and-1, 4th-and-2, sometimes even longer when you're inside the 20, and almost regardless now of where you are in the game. But do you think what happened on Sunday will have people rethinking it with Denver kind of missing a chance in a game that ended up being really tight and low scoring to go up by 10?
You know, I think that it won't. I think that this was one of those situations where the coach and his understanding of his personnel in the situation overtook what the analytics might have said. You know, I think a lot of people give Sean Payton a lot of grief because they lost that game by 3 points and they went forward on 4th-and-1 from the 14-yard line going in. But I think when you're looking at Peyton, he knows that Jarrett Stidham is not a great quarterback. He knows that Stidham has not had a lot of success in the NFL. As a matter of fact, he's had a lot of real anti-success. And Jarrett Stidham hadn't thrown a pass in a regular season game since the 2023 season. And now here he is having to start in the AFC Championship game. And so I think that the idea from Sean Payton, the Denver coach, was that if they've got the ball at fourth and one on the 14-yard line, they could kick a field goal there, but they really need a touchdown because they really can't count on getting down into that kind of a position for the rest of the game. I mean, they got there from a long pass. And so if you are Payton, you're thinking, okay, we have to take advantage of it now because we might not get back. And sure, it's fourth and one, and we might end up with no points in a game where points are at a premium. But at the same time, we can't afford to have a quarterback duel between our guy and Drake May. And so we're going to go for it. We're going to be aggressive. I thought it was the right move at the time. Whether or not it was from an analytics standpoint, I don't know. But from a standpoint of not trusting Jarrett Stidham to drive the field very many times in that game against the Patriots defense, I thought it was the right call. And I think most coaches making that decision going forward will recognize that.
I'm up here in Boston, and obviously the town is going crazy over the Patriots. And Drake May has had such a meteoric rise in such a short period of time. What do you think it is about Drake May that separates him from so many of the other young quarterbacks that are, you know, growing at lesser rates?
You know, well, he's got a combination of skill and common sense and just brashness. You put those three together, and you've got a guy that can do stuff. I mean, you've got quarterbacks that'll try to fit the ball into windows that some other quarterbacks would be able to. But this particular quarterback can't. So his confidence is greater than his skill level. You see that a lot, and those guys wash out pretty quickly. Then you've got guys that have the skill, but they are tentative. And so they could fit it into these windows, but they don't really want to because they're afraid. What you've got with Drake May is a combination of the best of those qualities. May has the ability to be able to hit those windows, but he's also got the confidence to be able to let it rip and sling it into those windows. And then he's got the common sense to not put it at risk more than he has to. Now, I think that's a combination that I think has helped him tremendously in the NFL. But if it weren't for his accuracy, then all the rest of it would have turned into a rash of interceptions, and we would not be talking about him this way.
Trevor, let's circle back and end where we started on Daboll. I was looking over his resume, and it's pretty interesting. I don't think I realized just how many different places he's been in front of some really interesting, you know, franchises. I mean, for example, Alabama, right before he got to the Bills. Of course, Bill Belichick way back with the Patriots. So he's been in a lot of interesting spots. How valuable is a variety of backdrops for a coach when he's trying to build a resume?
I think it's huge, Willie, because he's got different coaches that have different styles that he can draw from and learn from and then put his own stamp on things. I mean, he's been on the staff of some of the most successful coaches, college and NFL, of his generation. And so he's seen how to do it right in a way that has success. And then he says, okay, now when I go forward as a head coach, I like this, this, and this that Saban did or that Belichick did or that whoever did. But I don't like that and that. And I'm going to change that and put my personality on it going this way. If he only had one coach that he coached for, then he wouldn't have as much variety to be able to draw from to create his own recipe. So I think it's super valuable that he has had that kind of background. And really, from a standpoint of Cam Ward, you know, we've always talked about how this, you know, this offseason is the same as last offseason after the draft and last season. The whole direction of the franchise is to develop Cam Ward. And we know that Brian Daboll has had a successful experience developing Josh Allen coming out of college. And I think that is a wonderful thing should he become the offensive coordinator. Now, we may only have him here for 1 year. You know, he may go off and be a head coach in the next cycle if he doesn't become the head coach of the Raiders in this cycle. But at the same time, I think that, having that kind of a casserole of successful coaches to draw from would only help Cam Ward, and that's really what this is all about.
Trevor Maddich has been our guest on D-Mates. Vingan and Donnick, he joins us every Tuesday, and he is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, great stuff as always. Stay warm, stay safe. We'll catch up next week.
All right, thanks, guys.
615-737-1025. By the way, as we were chatting with Trevor, Jordan Schultz put this out, quote, breaking! The Titans have received a commitment from Brian Daboll to become their OC per multiple sources. He's in Nashville now to sign. Daboll has a strong affinity for quarterback Cam Ward, and the two will now officially be paired together. Apparently, Jelly Roll is also an NFL insider now because he tweeted, official, the Titans have signed Brian Daboll as offensive coordinator per at Jelly Roll 615. So what can't Jelly Roll do? He wrestles, he sings, he breaks news, he is multifaceted. Man, oh man. We all should aspire to be Jelly Roll. 615-737-1025. We will take your reaction to Daboll reportedly signing on the dotted line to be the Titans' next offensive coordinator. We'll also catch up with Willie Donick. We did not have a chance to talk with Willie yesterday. There's quite a bit of snow in Boston, Massachusetts, so we'll see how Willie's doing when we come back as well. 615-737-1025. But before we do that, I do have a pair of tickets to give away. If you want a pair of tickets to see the Nashville Hoop Showdown between Ohio State and Virginia on Saturday, February 14th at Bridgestone Arena, be caller number 3 right now at 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to see the Nashville Hoop Showdown between Ohio State and Virginia at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday, February 14th. Again, that number, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.